traveler and a patient man, but I've been mistreated just a time or two. I stood about all I'm gonna stand from you. I got my ticket in my hand just like everybody else. I paid my money in advance so I could use a little help. You're making such a fuss, you're holding up the line. Just get me on the plane, everything will be fine. I gotta go, you gotta get me to the show. Quit looking at my hair, just get me in the air. '52 telly hanging off of my back. It fits real easy in an overhead rack. If I was a guy in a suit with a kitchen sink, you'd let me ride on, you wouldn't even blink. But a guitar, you say, I gotta check it at the gate. Well, that isn't gonna happen. Get your hand off the case. Get your hand off the case, unless you wanna lose an arm. Get out of my face, you won't come to any harm. I gotta go, I gotta make it to the show. Quit giving me the stare, just get me in the air.
There he goes, James McMurtry, just trying to get in the air. I know just how he feels, because I had a little problem in my trip praying and traveling lately, and supposed to hit a connector flight in Denver, Colorado, and the connector flight left 15 minutes before we got there, so ended up having to stay in Denver overnight. I thought of that movie, What to Do in Denver When You're Gonna Die, I think was the title. I thought of that. And then they didn't pay all the motel. I had to pay part of the motel. What a hell of a mess that was. Top it all off, I got about 30 miles from my house, and I had a flat tire in the middle of the night, and it's colder than hell. You ever change a tire and with the snow all around you and everything else? But I'll say one thing, I stopped there and had a flat tire on one of the side streets in Peru, Indiana. And I had the AAA coming out, but I had 9 people stop and try to help me, ask if they could help. 9 people on a little side street in Peru, Indiana. I said, I think I'm going to sell out and move down here. You got some good white people down here. Well, it's February the 20th, 2014, and this is Thursday. And here's Terrible Tommy right here in the bunker, all ready to go. And let's see what I got. I want to read you something from one of our contacts among the Jews. Yeah. let's see. What did he call himself? Anyhow, this is a point of view he's got about the whole thing. Oh, yeah, it's Jews for Hitler out of New York. And I quote, I watched that video a whole bunch of times. He's talking about my White American Political Association versus Irv Rubin on the Wally George show. I noticed how the above-named Yid was loved by Wally George Shabbos Goyim audience. Ben Yonatan lauded the audience on how intelligent they were. That's what my tribe likes, people they can easily brainwash and use for their purposes. My uncle's widow, Dagmar, had commented to me once how the Orthodox Jews want non-Jews to have Christ insanity, not Judaism. They want to stick it to everyone. You really have to face people like that down and tell them that they're thralls that their beliefs are unscientific and wrong. They're not intelligent at all, but are brainwashed dupes. I used to sing to a contingent of women at a kibbutz in Israel's Bet Shean Valley during my third trip to the state of Israel. I used to tell them, I think this is all brainwashing. I wasn't even convinced of it back then. The Jews may think they're getting away with this, but the hammer will come down again. We will see it. New York City. Jews for Hitler. Well, it's certain that Christianity is the best thing that's happened to the Jews that evolved into Christianity. It's been their best weapon to divide and conquer without firing a shot the white Aryan people. And that's for damn sure. I hear these blacks call in on their black call-in radio shows. They're always whining and whining and whining about things. And I've told several of them, you know what kept you on the plantation? It wasn't the master. He didn't have that many people backing him up. It was the Christian. The Christian religion kept you enslaved. I venture to say that if they hadn't gotten you into the Christian religion, Mr. Black Man, half of those people on those plantations would have been revolting and running off all the time. And maybe rising up and having one of those cut-the-throat type situations of the massa up in the big house, the big capitalist up there. Yeah. Technically, an honest white man would have to say that you have to understand why blacks would rise up and cut the throat of their master. If I was a slave of anybody and belonged to anybody, and I'd want to get out of there, and I'd slit anybody's throat that tried to stop me. So when whites get all upset, oh my God, they rose up and slit the throats. Well, don't you think they sort of had it coming? Now, don't call in now and say I'm a Negro lover. I do believe in common sense and a reasonable amount of understanding, and I think that's the best way to operate if you're going to promote racial separation instead of racial oppression. Get your dues in, your donations for the radio show and donations for other projects that we'd like to work on here. Send it to P.O. Box 401, Warsaw, Indiana, 46581. Told you, with the new phone setup, with our regular message line being 559-670-1473, that leaves us a phone here in the bunker free, and so that's going to be my personal line if you want to get in touch with Terrible Tommy. And if you call during the times that I normally am doing the show, between usually, 10 o'clock in the morning till about 2 o'clock in the afternoon, taking care of things here, I'll pick up and I'll talk to you, hopefully having you, if you got something important to say, I'll put it on the radio show, okay? Well, yesterday I was talking to you about why the Allied forces couldn't prolong the war in Europe long enough for them to get the A-bomb ready, because it's been written by Jews and other people how they were hell-bent to drop that A-bomb on Germany. Well, I thought of another reason why they may have not, because by the time at the end there, the Red Army was coming on strong, and it was technically an ally. I mean, you know, it was at the time, it was an ally, and if they'd have dropped that atomic bomb, and it would have wiped out half the Red Army that were closing in into Germany. I think they wanted to think that over. Man, I don't know what Uncle Joe's going to do. I don't think he would have done much, but you never know. So I think they decided, well, these Japanese are sitting ducks over there. We'll go drop them on the Japanese to test these birds out. There's something that I was talking about yesterday that I just happened to remember about these blacks that are always on there, and they got a word for it, and I didn't write it down, about black targets or black youth being targets. Well, they don't happen to say that most of the time they're targets by other black youth. I would say 80 to 90% of the time black youth are targets of black youth. I mean, you don't hear of very many whites out on the street beating up blacks or shooting or knifing blacks. Of course, it happens. It probably should happen more if they're guilty of being bad, I mean really bad asses, not just for playing their music too loud. But that really gets me, and I forget the word now, but the blacks use that all the time, that and they infer, they don't say it. Well, sometimes they do. It's these white people that are killing these black kids all over the country. It's going on all the time. Well, it happens now and then, and a lot of times it's justified. But most of the time, in 9 out of 10 cases, it's the blacks killing their own. And then they act like we're killing them. They infer that we're killing them. I haven't heard of any whites around here in Indiana killing any black people. Now, I've been here, 8 years now from California? I don't remember one. But I know every time I pick up the newspaper from the largest regional city around here, Fort Wayne, there's all kinds of black crime, blacks killing blacks, almost every day. And that's just, it's a fairly big city, but it's nothing like Chicago or other cities like Indianapolis. But they just sort of ignore that. And the thing that really, really galls me is they don't identify the people involved in shooting and that type of violence on the street. Yesterday or a couple of days ago, there were 5 people shooting at each other up in Fort Wayne, Indiana. But they never tell what the race is. 5 young men. 5 young men. Well, I think the public deserves to know if there's 5 young men shooting it out, and they may be headed down your neighborhood. If you see 5 guys running down the street with guns, you'd like to know what the hell's going on. But the police departments probably release that they are black. But the Jewish media, the corrupt white media, the corporate media, will not say that they're black. Now, once in a while, they have pictures of them, mugshots and like that, but they can't hide that. But it's really something, the way they manipulate the facts. It sure is. Oh, yeah, one comment about that Wally George show that I appeared on so many times. that was just Hollywood. That was a carnival operation, and Wally ran it that way. Most of the kids in the audience, and there was all, just about all kids, and I mean, you know, maybe 16 to 20, and almost all of them were students and college students, and half of them, I think, were high on marijuana or something when they got there. And this was their entertainment, and they loved to boo and yell and scream and like that, and in a way, they were a lot of fun, but they... You can't take too much from what they were cheering or booing about. I know that when they used to boo and give me trouble, I'd turn around and smile at them, and half of them would be smiling back. So that Wally George show was not a real real evidence of exactly how all those white kids felt. Boys and girls, I just sent you out one of a funny but very sad video that was downloaded from YouTube of the drunkest guy I have ever seen. And I've seen some pretty drunk guys in my day. So I recommended that instead of having the classical music soundtrack on it, to add Tom T. Hall's famous song, I Like Beer. And it'd really make it a classic. Well, you know, I have not much sympathy for illegal aliens. But this story coming out of San Diego is something else, because I've seen some pretty bizarre things down there where I remember one 80-year-old Mexican field hand was walking along the road in East County, and he was drunk, and he had a rake, and he was waving his rake around in the air. And instead of the sheriffs that came on the scene just throwing a net over him or taking it away from him and taking him away, they shot him and killed him. Now, I'm forgetting all these illegal aliens back to Mexico, but that's not the way I would operate. I don't think that any honorable white man should operate that way. Well, here's another one. A man who was shot and killed by a U.S. Border Patrol agent threw large rocks at the agent, including one about the size of a basketball, the investigator said Wednesday. The man, 41-year-old Mexican citizen, suspected of being in the U.S. illegally and probably drunk, that's me, because those Mexicans, they can't handle too much beer, began throwing fist-sized rock at the agent from a hillside perch. Well, I've had people throw rocks at me, and it's usually not too hard to avoid a rock. Most rocks. The San Diego County Sheriff's Department said the rocks became larger and one of the bigger pieces hit the agent in the head. That pissed him off. The Sheriff's Department said the agent fired his gun at least twice Tuesday, fearing he might be killed or incapacitated if he was hit again in the head. What's this stupid agent doing? Standing right there and letting him hit him with the rocks? Why didn't he just get in his patrol car and wait the guy out a little bit? The agent tried to revive the man. And, oh, it was Jesus. Jesus Flores Cruz, well, who had two gunshot wounds and died at the scene. The sheriff's department released the identity of Flores Cruz on Wednesday night, saying his identity was confirmed by a fingerprint match from a 1996 arrest by the U.S. Drug Enforcement Agency. So there you go, the death penalty for crossing the border there. So now that's even more radical than I've proposed. It's really sort of sad because cops overreact all the time. They overreact, and that brings me to another point. I was talking yesterday about white people being scared to death of Negroes and African Americans, and that's caused mostly by the media and media movies and Hollywood movies and sitcoms and all that bullshit, that they're literally scared to death of Negroes. And, you know, I remember one time going on a fishing trip with my uncle after I got out of the Army. We went up into Canada and all around, and then we came down through Chicago, and we were having a few beers along the way. We ended up in South Chicago. It was all black. We went into an all-black bar and sit there, drank our beer, didn't have any problem, and left. Well, the one thing you don't do in a bar, I hope you know that, is stare at people. If you mind your own business and keep your eye on your bottle and whoever's with you, most of the time you're going to be okay. But anyhow, the other point is, these cops, you know, for all the bravado and for all their muscle building and tight shirts and all that stuff, and all their guns all over them and everything, and their dark tinted windows, which is psychologically a tip off there, they're afraid. That's why there's so many shootings by cops on blacks. It's not so much that they want to shoot them or desire to shoot them, because they know probably the consequences, but they're scared of them. And that fear, when you're in fear, you don't act rationally. So cops have the same problem as civilians, that some little thing may come up, like this Dutton and the kids playing their stupid music too loud, which infuriates all of us. But in fear, they do the wrong thing. They go overboard. And then they're many times throw their life away. But these cops, and they're killing more blacks than the general public, white cops, is because they see an alley. They don't want to go down that damn alley if they're... They heard there's niggers down that alley. I ain't going down there. Or if I go down there, I'm going to shoot anything that moves. I'll bet you anything, this Mexican they just shot was drunk, inebriated, because most of the time when Mexicans do crazy things, they've been drinking. And that's the Indian blood, the Asian blood in the mestizo. That's why they couldn't, it was against the law to sell whiskey to the Indians, because they're Asian. They couldn't handle their liquor. I've sat at a table with a mestizo one time way back in California. And hell, a couple, three beers, and he's under the table. I mean, you know, that's the reason. I used to see these movies and say, well, that ain't fair. They won't let the Indians have any whiskey. Well, the reason they didn't, because the Indians have whiskey, they go crazy. Go out and kill a bunch of white people or burn their house down. Anyhow, this doesn't mean I'm soft on illegal aliens or anything like that, but I think if you're going to kill somebody, it should be under honorable conditions and not just because they're throwing a rock at you. That's another reason why I advise white separatists, lone wolves and so forth, and especially if you're known as a white separatist and in their computer. If you get stopped out on the highway or wherever, they're already scared. They'll never admit they're scared, but they're antsy because they've heard all these Southern Poverty Law Center stories about how we're all homicidal maniacs and we'll kill the first person that approaches us, which of course you know is not true. Well, you get stopped like that, you better obey what the cop tells you to do, unless you're, you know, going to do a real number and go out shooting or something for some reason, if you're maybe on the run or something. But under normal conditions, if he says, put your hands up, get down on your knees, if he says, lay flat on the ground, you put the handcuffs on you, and that's it. Because if you don't watch out and you make any kind of funny move, since they're already in an agitated state, you don't know what they read on that computer in the car. I mean, you don't know how bad the description they've got of you is in that computer. So you better follow every instruction, or a cop in fear, agitated and so forth, may just pull a trigger prematurely. So watch it. I see on some of these cop shows, especially with the blacks, they tell them put their hands up. They don't put their hands up. They tell them get down on their knees. They don't get down on their knees. and they have a hell of a time, it's a wonder they don't shoot more of them, because they don't follow simple instructions. And, boy, I'll tell you, with the police situation like it is nowadays, that's not a good idea. And to be perfectly honest about it, if you were a cop, and we know we have cop friends around, I mean, you know, lone wolves, we don't want them to talk to us, or we talk to them, or, you know, front themselves off, because anybody finds out, they lose their career. Our instructions or advice to cops is, if you're part of what we're doing, then you just go about your business as a cop, act professionally, and there may be times when you can help out a white person and look the other way. But so if you were one of those guys and you come upon something that looks interesting, and you look in your computer screen and you see white supremacist known to carry guns, hangs out with blah blah, or skinhead, or something like that. Or if it's a black guy, well, this guy's with the 86th Street gang, or he's rumored to be dangerous. Well, you're going to come out of that patrol car, man, and you're going to be very, very careful how you approach the situation. And you're going to have a very quick trigger finger, because even if you're not really scared, you're probably in fear a little bit. And it wouldn't take much to blast away. And a lot of that is not because the officer wants to kill somebody. It's just a fear reaction. I'm going to read you a little bit here that came in from this fellow. He sends me stuff every once in a while. I have no idea anything about him. I don't know whether it's a bunch of crap or not. I'll read a few paragraphs here at something that could be suspicious enough. From the very start of Euromaidan, which I never heard of, each team leader of the neo-Nazi right-wing sector RWS receives a cash reward for each active fighter for $200 per day, an additional $500 if the group is over 10 people. Group coordinators from the U.S., $2,000 per day of rioting, provided that the controlled group performs direct offensive action against law enforcement officials and representatives of public authorities. The cash for the RWS flows from the U.S. Embassy in Kiev through diplomatic channels to the central offices of the neo-Nazi Freedom Party leader Taganabak Frotman, half-Jew, and Fatherland Party leaders Jewess Julia Kapitelman and Timoshenko, Jew Arseny and Jasenchuk from the family of rabbis. About $20 million per week, private bank of the Jewish tycoon Igor Kolomoisky is the main part of this financial backing. Kolomoisky is the main financial backer of Frotman, Freedom Party, and the Bandero Stetsko Shutkovich organization of the Ukrainian nationalists. In turn, these funds are distributed by for support of Euromaidan / RWS for daily payments to active fighters for bribes, drugs, weapons, Molotov cocktails, and so forth. The RWS leader receives money by bank transfers on their personal accounts in the Kamalinsky Jewish Private Bank. It is confirmed also main financial backers of RWS is another Jewish tycoon, Poroshenko. Some assume RWS is simply Poroshenko private army. Interestingly, in 2006, already the future militants of RWS were taught special forces and guerrilla warfare in Estonia by NATO military instructors. Well, let me see here. I want to see a little bit more of this. Just a second here. The main backer of Euromaidan, that's Euromaidan in the U.S., is Jewess Victoria Nuland, who I've never heard of. BTW here, Jewish MP from the Fatherland Party, Sergei Pashinsky, with a sniper rifle in his car. Presumably he shoots both at Berkut riot police guys and RWS rebels, typically Jewish false flag mode operations. However, it was confirmed Ukrainian far-right leaders, at their request, received firm guarantees from the USA and EU for emergency evacuation from the territory of Ukraine and the provision of accommodation and facilities in any EU country. A vivid example are the Avtomaidan leader Sergei Koba, who escaped to Germany, and Spilna Spravda chief Alexander Danyuk, who lives in London already. Yes, RWS rank and file militants are presumably Jew haters, likewise Libyan and Syrian Western Wahhabi Israel-backed rebels. At any rate, generally, the Ukrainian war is in the same pattern as the wars in Libya and Syria. NB, RWS heroes are Syrian rebels. RWS hoists Free Syria flag together with Bandera 1, as the American blockhead John Friend writes in a recent issue of the American Free Press. Nationalism is on the rise in the Ukraine. Ha ha! And this naive idiot is the staff writer for now AFP through Michael Collins Piper, who was sacked recently. John Friend, Ukrainian favorites have no allies among the Slavonian nationalists, but collaborate closely with Meyer Kahani types. I'll send this along to you, and you can comment on it or research it. This fellow's name is allegedly Alexander Mezentsev, M-E-Z-E-N-T-S-E-V. Well, it's hard, of course, for us to know what's going on over there, and I'm sure things like this happen because I know how it happened in this country. I know how National Socialists, and I knew the National Socialists, who were recruited to go through Mexico down to Colombia, and they were going to go on a CIA-sponsored ship deal over to Liberia, and they were going to be raising hell over there for some reason. And they got arrested by the Colombian government and put into jail, and I do know for a fact that their cell door was opened one night, and they escaped and were allowed to get out of Colombia and come back to the United States. Now, one of these so-called Nazis turned out to be a government informant who I caught as a government informant at our first skinhead rally up east of San Francisco. And he was exposed again. He was one of these guys that was on the active payroll of CIA back then. So we do know that these a lot of times these Hollywood Nazis are bankrolled by other organizations and federal people like FBI and so forth, the CIA. I know that for a fact. And that's why I'm very suspicious of any right-wing militant group in Europe. Because the right-wing militant groups have traditionally been manipulated and many times led by the very people that they say they're against. That's why I'm very suspicious of Golden Dawn or any of these groups. Because, number one, I believe their tactics stink. And number two, this is a traditional way that the CIA operates and funds these over-anxious right-wingers who want to look like big shots, tough guys, and they have no real social plan or anything for the working class of the country they're in. The first sign of that is they're marching down a street and all the bravado and flags and everything else. Now, many times the people who do that are serving another master. They don't know it. They just get all jacked up and think they're doing something really great, but they're being used. So remember that, and be careful what you get involved with. And don't be sending money to these groups overseas that you don't have any way of knowing for sure what they are, because you may be sending money to the very enemies that you're wanting to fight. It'd be very difficult to determine what's going on over in Eastern Europe and back the right people. You better keep your money here in the United States. Suspicious of this Golden Dawn that all of a sudden started up a network here in the United States. I've seen this before, and I don't trust it, because it can be a reverse conduit set up by feds and CIA. So you got to be real careful. Don't let your emotions and your gung-ho-ness carry you away and get you into something that you'll never win, and you're liable to get your ass killed or set up. Evidently, I have the name someplace of that CIA-paid National Socialist that I was speaking of. He's probably still kicking around. I mean, he's younger than I am, so he's maybe still kicking around and infiltrating groups for whatever reason. You know, it sort of reminds me of one of my one of my other failed ideas. I was contacted, and I think I told you this maybe several times before, but I was contacted by an anonymous source on the phone, and he wanted to volunteer. He had a ship, a seaworthy ship. I don't know if it was a World War II ship or what. Anyhow, he wanted to volunteer that ship to set it offshore, off California shores, and set up a Radio Free America station on it, which I thought would be a great idea, and of course I was quite interested. And the reason was I had a 10,000 watt broadcast transmitter sitting in a friend of mine's garage who built it, and he was willing to donate it for that cause, so I was pretty excited about this. Of course, now they consider, I guess, 20 miles and not a 3-mile limit, but anyhow, he called me a couple of times. He said, "I want you to come down to Tijuana, Mexico, to talk about it." I said, "Well, I don't think I'm need to come to Mexico. Don't you ever get to San Diego?" "Well, not really." "Well, I'll tell you what. I'll meet you, but you got to come to San Diego." Because I was being careful. I'm not going to go down to Tijuana, somebody I never met that wanted to set me up with this great deal. So that's the last time I got a call from the guy. It was obviously a setup. And something that sophisticated could have very well been a CIA situation to bump me off. Not that I'm that important. But that just gives you an idea of what they'll do. Look at Randy up there in Idaho. They come to him with simple things like, "Would you cut the barrels off of these shotguns and shorten them?" Not legal length, but just under the legal length. Now, Randy should have had, if he had a brain in his head, should have been able to figure that out. He should have said, "Well, you take a hacksaw, put in a vise, and cut them off. And file off the sharp edges." Or say, "Well, I'll be glad to cut it off, but legal length. We're only talking about an inch. Or me even a half-inch difference." But yet, all the problems that Randy got into up there came from that particular move, which was, unfortunately, I got to say, that was dumb. I was backing those people 100%, but still, that was dumb. So if you're going to do dumb things, now we all can make mistakes and screw up, but if you do dumb things, you're going to go down, and that's exactly what's going on up there in Leith right now. Instead of playing it the way, just quietly move in if you want to do that. I don't see anything really to gain by being in Leith, North Dakota, because it's too far from the Canadian border, and it's not that tactically important. But anyhow, here's the same old thing. The right wing, National Socialists, come roaring in there to do their thing. And I'm just suspicious of all that kind of activity, because I've seen it happen so many times before. Well, there's a new movie out. But no, it's not out of Hollywood. The Jewish gang that pulled off the most famous bank robbery in communist history. A new Romanian film starring Vera Farmiga recreates a notorious incident which echoes in today's European anti-Semitism. Ney Caron Fils, Closer to the Moon, title, is a Romanian film that tells the story of the Eastern Bloc's most famous bank heist, carried out by six Jewish intellectuals in 1959. The robbery has since become one of the most heavily disputed incidents in that country's communist past. The Romanian Communist Party, PCR, ascending to power on December 30, 1947, after the forced abdication of King Michael I, took upon itself the task of unburdening Romania from its long-standing history as an agrarian backwater. The 1950s, under the then-leader Gheorghe Georgiou Dej, pardon my pronunciation, brought with it massive industrialization initiatives that catalyzed the construction of thousands of factories and power plants. Set against this backdrop, Caronfil's film begins with a recreation of that famous heist, a spectacular Western-style stick-up. A taxi swerves into the scene, sporting gas masks, and robbers put up a sign indicating filming was in progress. The stage is set, the camera rolling, threatening the driver of the National Bank of Romania van with semi-automatic weapons. The actors empty the vehicles of all its money as they speed away. Forgetting the film in progress sign, the group of citizens gathering on the street corner applauds what they believe to be an action-packed movie shoot. Little do they know that what they've just witnessed was the real biggest bank robbery in communist history. Among these star-struck citizens, we meet Virgil, a young waiter at a nearby cafe, who soon becomes involved with a strange film production where he finds the same bandits, all Jews, are being forced as punishment and to produce propaganda to reenact what he now learns was an actual theft. Virgil finds the criminals fascinating, taking advantage of their absurd Kafkaesque circumstance. All six seem to take their sentences with jovial indifference. On this prison set, they indulge in Hollywood histrionics as newfangled actors. Well, anyhow, I'll send you the rest of this story along, and you can read it yourself. It's an interesting story. And you thought the Jews only owned banks. Well, some of them rob banks. Well, I don't know whether this is true or not, but new research allegedly reveals that the Germans attempted to use mosquitoes as biological weapons during World War II. In 1941, Heinrich Himmler ordered the creation of a research station based out of the Dachau concentration camp. The station claimed to be conducting defensive research aimed at protecting the German people from deadly diseases. However, evidence discovered by the University of Tübingen ecologist Klaus Reinhardt shows that the station was actually working on a program to breed and disseminate malaria-ridden mosquitoes into enemy territory. Hitler repeatedly and strictly ordered that the biological weapons should not be used even for defensive purposes, Reinhardt told Smithsonian.com. Quote, however, his order of extreme efforts into defense from biological weapons left the door open for those authorities that attempted to circumvent Hitler's biological weapons ban. Hitler had officially agreed not to use biological or chemical weapons when Germany signed the Geneva Protocol in 1925. Now, this may be one of the reasons Hitler didn't use anthrax and so forth, and that other very deadly disease or chemical that he could have dropped on a Red Army and wiped them all out overnight, but he didn't. Which, if Hitler was such a horrible bad guy, why didn't he want to use biological weapons? Our wonderful Christian government sure would have no problem using. We've got its biological agents stored all over the country and all over the world. And we give this stuff to other countries, like Saddam Hussein, people like that. Reinhardt's research also uncovered a secret plot to use fleas to spread the plague. The project, codenamed Siebenschlafer, or Dormouse, had the potential to wreak inconceivable and irreversible damage. Hitler's insufficient scientific knowledge, however, kept the potentially fatal program from taking flight. Behind the project was a bizarre mix of Himmler's smattering of scientific knowledge, personal paranoia, and esoteric worldview. Reinhardt told German newspapers Sudetendische Zeitung. In comparison with the biological research of the Allied forces, he said, German research had been risible. Very interesting. Interestingly enough, Hitler stopped a lot of weaponry he could have used, biological and so forth, and probably turned the war around, especially if he'd have released this serene gas on the Red Army as they approached. That stuff would have wiped them all out. But it was a very... it would have killed everybody else, too, in over there in Eastern Europe as the Red Army approached. It would seem like Uncle Adolf, I may disagree with a lot of things, but he seems to have been a lot more moral than people give him credit. Well, let's tune in to Rogue Molloy and see what he's got to say about this. Is covering some religion here. He has a Wednesday night deal on church night, so we borrowed a little from him.
The Catholic Church thing is just fascinating to me. As you know, Pope Benedict is going to remain in on Vatican property, so he can't be extradited. The papacy becomes vacant, and he will assume the title of Pope Emeritus. And he will continue to be addressed as Your Holiness. Really? Holy. Now, he also, in case you're interested, I remember the movie with Tony... what was his name? The Shoes of the Fisherman. Anthony, the Greek guy. Can't think of his name. Doesn't matter. I remember the movie Shoes of the Fisherman several years ago. I didn't go see it because there was a spate of those Catholic or Christian movies that were out in the 50s and 60s that were just, oh my goodness. But anyway, the Shoes of the Fisherman, he will lay them aside. They are red. The Shoes of the Fisherman. I guess Jesus was considered a fisher of souls. Ooh, that's kind of scary. But why the red shoes, I have no idea. It's just a little, you know, I guess kind of a fashion statement or something, right? Red shoes. So he's going to get rid of those, and he will wear brown loafers given to him by shoemakers during a trip to León, Mexico last year. And... according to a spokesperson from the Vatican, he will wear a simple white cassock. I want to know what kind of is he going to wear boxers or briefs under that cassock? I think we ought to know, since we know that he's going to wear brown loafers and a simple white cassock. What's underneath it, Mr. Pope? Or, I'm sorry, Your Holiness. Now, also, his lead seal and his ring of office, also known as the Ring of the Fisherman. We have the shoes of the fisherman and the ring of the fisherman. Somewhere in there, I'm sure, we have the fishing pole of the fisherman. But the ring of the fisherman will be destroyed, according to church rules, just as if Pope Benedict had died. And
oops, that's not the track I wanted to play. Let me see if I can find it.
Anyway, demon-possessed sweaters. Pat Robertson has now gone so far over the deep end that he will never, ever, ever make it back. I mean, this is just utter madness. But I thought I would pass it on to you and it's not just Robertson. Obviously, this Carrie person who wrote in, sounds like a teenager, and her mom must be totally insane, raising a daughter to believe that before you bring clothing into the house, you have to pray over it to attach familiar spirits and exorcise possible demons. I mean, think about this for a minute, okay? I mean, truly, think about this. This is in the United States of America in the year 2013. Think about this. A teenage person, a young girl, has to, after discussion with her mom, write an email to Pat Robertson and ask about demons attaching themselves to clothing. Thanks, Christians. Thanks for all the poison you injected into the human mind. Thanks, Muslims. Thanks, Jews. Thank you very much, Hindus. Thank you, any other religions that contribute to this insanity on this poor, tired, eventually to explode planet Earth. I mean, thanks a hell of a lot for all this madness that you have injected. Thanks for all your molestations and your tortures and your witch burnings and your inquisitions and your suicide bombers and your just all of your sickness. Thanks for bringing it to a species that probably deserves it. I mean, we've done nothing to control our population growth. Here we are, what, 7.5 billion, 8 billion of us crowded onto the earth? Thanks a lot, religion. Thanks for denying science. Thanks for denying the obvious. Thanks for embedding yourself in hysteria and unreason and punishment and death and blood and slaughter and eternal hell. Thanks a lot. You've really, really done an exemplary job. Thanks for wiping out indigenous populations as you brought your scum-sucking filth all over this planet. Thanks. Thanks a lot. Sarcasm mode off. All right, we have a break.
I just got a call from a young lady. I actually sounded a little older than real young. And unfortunately, I didn't have my tape deck on here to record it. She said, I got a dollar bill here. It's got your phone number on it. So I thought I'd call and see what that's all about. So I said, well, you go up to resist.com. And you can see what it's all about. Well, what's it about? Well, what do you say it's about? I say, well, it's about race. It's about environment. It's about economics. It's about art. It's about all kinds of things. Oh, okay, I'll go up and check it out. I said, well, call me back if you agree with some of it. If you don't, well, you know, thank you. And away she went. Very pleasant lady. So, evidently, there are some people out there putting our phone number on dollar bills. And there's many places that people have put our number and our website, resist.com. I think it's probably more important to put resist.com out there than it is necessarily the phone number. However, that's okay. I'll answer it, and I'll talk to whoever calls. Well, well, well. Brandeis University, the Jew University, student president, Ricky Rosen. They invited grandsons of Nelson Mandela. Daba Mandela and Kweku Mandela, and sort of backfired on them because they came out attacking Israel and insulting China. These Jews are very unhappy with the Mandela boys. You know, in here they talked about Africa rising. The only way Africa arises is when whites dump money into Africa, or when the capitalists go down there and build factories or something like that. Here was one of the comments about these guys appearing at Brandeis University and insulting Israel. Quote, the students at Brandeis University would applaud anti-Israel comments, make me sick. These are the people who elected Obama. Why would any Jewish institution invite people like that to speak is beyond me. Oh, man. Sometimes things are quite funny. I see Israel is going to sell $500 million worth of natural gas to Jordan. Wait a minute. I didn't think Jordan was very happy, and I don't think they recognize Israel, do they? That's interesting. Sure is. Here's one way to get rid of your illegal aliens, especially the Negro ones. Israel has begun sending illegal African infiltrators to Uganda. At least Israel calls them infiltrators. Here they call them immigrants. The country of Theodore Herzl, he once imagined more than a century ago, would be the home of the Jewish state. Wouldn't that have been much better than what we've got today if they hadn't have chosen Palestine? Activists who encouraged the infiltrators to demand remaining in Israel have argued that sending them to Uganda does not mean that they will be allowed to stay there instead of being sent back to their native countries and face possible prosecution. The claim that the African migrants are legally entitled to asylum in Israel is spurious, because according to international law, that status applies only to the country where they arrived after leaving home. In the case of the Africans, they usually arrive in Egypt before crossing illegally into Israel. Well, that means that all the invaders that are south of Mexico and who fly into this country are definitely not legal to be here, right? Well, there's a little problem over in Spain, because the Spanish Muslims urged their government to grant citizenship to descendants of Muslims who were expelled from Spain in addition to the Jews. The demand was made this week in a statement by the Association for Historical Legacy of Al-Andalus, the Spanish News Service, EFE. The Spanish state should grant the same rights to all those who were expelled. Otherwise, their decision is selective, if not racist, Bale Lubaris, the association president, said. The association named several families currently residing in North Africa as candidates for receiving Spanish citizenship. Several other prominent Muslims and legal experts accused the Spanish government of pursuing a double standard, following the approval on February 10th of a bill proposing to naturalize descendants of Sephardic Jews, which the government said was to atone for the expulsions 500 years ago. They never learn, do they? Submitted by Spain's Justice Minister, Alberto Ruiz Galeran, the bill is expected to go up to a vote in Spanish Congress this year. Portugal already passed a law granting citizenship to descendants last year, and its interior ministry is currently drafting regulations ahead of the law's application, according to Portuguese lawmakers who submitted the bill. The Jews were persecuted in Spain and Portugal during the Inquisition, which the Catholic Church and the royal houses of both countries led against non-Christians in the 15th and 16th century. recognition of the Sephardic community is symbolic, necessary, and just. The same applies to those who have kept their endless Moorish identity in exile. Manuel Antonio Rodriguez, a professor of law at the University of Cordoba, told the El Confidential Daily on Sunday. So, that ain't fair. That ain't right. You're going to let the Jews back into Spain, man. You got to give citizenship to those Muslims, too, that you ran out. Woo-wee. Well, now I know why Coca-Cola wants to sell Coke in Israel. They charge 6 times the price in Israel for a can of Coke than they do here. Isn't that... That sounds anti-Semitic. I mean... anti-Semitic to me. Here's a little bit more on the Ukrainian situation. Let's see here. I had sent out an email this morning, and I sent it to you too about the situation over there. And I got a reply here from one fellow said, "Rest assured, if there's any mischief going on in the world, and you dig deep enough, you'll find the stinking Jew. Thanks for this." Then on down here, it says, Ukrainian media have reported that a former Israeli army officer is playing a leading role in the anti-government protests in former Soviet Republic. According to reports, the unnamed Israeli commands a group of 20 Ukrainian militants. 4 other Israelis who have previously served in the army were recently reported to have taken part in opposition rallies in Ukraine's capital, Kiev. They were born in the Ukraine but migrated to Israel and joined its armed forces before returning to the European country for demonstrations. And I wonder who sent them. Could the first letter be M, followed by O, followed by S? S? A.D.? Inquiring minds would like to know. Meanwhile, Ukrainian media said that an Israeli tycoon provides financial support to the opposition in the Ukraine, adding that Israel's Mossad intelligence agency is one of the instigators of the unrest in the country. And of course, if Israel is in there, you know, at the behest of the United States, Israel's colony. So that's a little bit more. It might help you make a little bit more decision on what's going on in the Ukraine. Other comments on that same email. You are welcome. Alex and Tom has an excellent point here on how we judge veracity of these people. If they're not truly populist, they aren't one of us. Populism is defined in the word dictionary as follows: the political doctrine that supports the rights and powers of the common people in their struggle with the privileged elite, unquote. I like that term. I think that a tremendous number of people worldwide fall into that category. That's it for today, boys and girls. We'll be back tomorrow on Freya's Day. That's Ladies' Day, She-Wolf Day in the bunker. That's right. 14.5, and don't forget, there is no such thing as equality. No, 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 no. Rights, no. Only privileges. And if you're a bad boy or a bad girl, they can take them away, or at least try to. Yeah. Anybody want to argue about that? In other words, there's nothing you have that can't be taken away from you by rich and powerful people. So, what rights do you have? You have the right to, you have the natural privilege of killing them if they try. You have privileges that you create out of your own brain and your own muscle and your own blood. And they have privileges they grant to the sheep. I like my privileges better.
Et cetera, et cetera. Trillions and trillions and trillions and trillions of separate little bits of electronic information flying all around the world through the air at all times. Think of that. Think of how busy the air is. Then realize this. 100 years ago, there was none. None. Silence. Here are 7 things I'm tired of. I'm getting tired of guys who smoke pipes. When are they going to outlaw this shit? Guy with a fucking pipe. It's an arrogant thing to place a burning barrier between you and the rest of the world. It's supposed to imply thoughtfulness or intelligence. It's not intelligent to stand around with a controlled fire sticking out of your mouth. I say, hey, professor, you want something hot to suck on? Call me. I'll give you something to put in your mouth. I think these pipe smokers ought to just move to the next level and go ahead and suck a dick. Nothing wrong with sucking dicks. Men do it. Women do it. Can't be all bad if everybody's doing it. I say drop the pipe and go to the dick. That's my advice. I'm here to help.
Well, that'll teach me. I should check these out before I run them. I get caught every once in a while that way. George, you're a nutty, nutty, potty-mouthed guy. Believe it or not, I'm not set up to edit.